If your driver is from 3 or 4 years ago, you probably won't see a massive change.
We'll literally tell everybody, till my grave, dude, just go buy last year's model of a used one and you're going to get pretty darn close.
Maybe they're skinny dipping some shots. They're getting them fat on those chip shots and, you know, they dunk those chips a couple feet in front of them. Like those cavity back or a Cleveland CBZ is one that has been a game changer for those folks.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
That was the first time I almost didn't make it down from setting my cameras up. That was actually crazy. We were talking about our pros, and I'm like acting like a rookie here getting this thing started.
No, this is pretty smooth what you got in here. We got the ring lights. We got the cameras.
I know, man.
We got the flags back here.
And I'm still staying true to the just white picnic tables, man. Yeah, I can't change it. I'm too far in now.
You could put a tablecloth or something in it, but there's kind of something, you know, it's...
It's different. Yeah, it's pure. It's pure. Started from the bottom, and now we're still here at the bottom. I was putting in your name to my phone, and I realized I've been spelling it wrong this whole time. Is it Mahold or Mahold?
So Mahold is the pronunciation, but like when you say it fast, you really only say the two syllables, Mahold, but there really is three.
M-A-H-O-W-A-L-D. Mahowald.
Yeah.
Is how it like looks.
Yeah, that would be like the official pronunciation, but like people go fast and say Mahold. Yeah.
So. Got it. Tell us about yourself, because you got one of the best jobs in golf, in my opinion, so.
Yeah. So
I want to hear about it.
First of all, thank you for having me on the show. This is fantastic, and I've been, you know, watching some of the other Second Swing folks on, and it's been great. But yeah, I am a little bit different from maybe some of the previous guests. I'm not a fitter. Well, as of now, I'm not. I'm actually going through the certifications.
Are you really?
Right now. So I will be able to call myself a fitter hopefully the next
Will you months. Actually do fittings?
Probably
Because you're
not.
Like all the content. And
yeah. So I mean, what I want to be able to do is when people are watching on YouTube and they see me talking about golf clubs, I want to be able to say that I'm a fitter and not just like the guy who knows golf clubs.
Sure.
And, you know, I feel like I'm an expert on golf clubs, but then our fitters are like whatever the next level is of that. And so,
well, this would be great to understand. I didn't know. I guess I shouldn't have assumed, but like, what do you have to go through to actually be a fitter?
Yeah.
This is a great way to start this combo.
Yeah. So right now I'm in the midst of, there's a number of fittings that you have to observe. Have to go through, watch not just one fitter, but several different fitters, watch the process. And ideally it's also various types of golfers. So it's not the same, you know, all bunch of scratch golfers getting fit. You know, you get male golfers, female golfers, you get fast swing speeds, slow swing speeds, you get the whole thing. And then once you're comfortable and you feel comfortable where like you understand the process, you're asking questions to all the fitters after the fitting, and then you would fit a couple of fitters. And so they become the golfer and you fit them. And then from there, there's a kind of a sort of a quiz or like a you know, feedback session after that.
Yeah.
And then at that point they say, okay, now you can go on the fitting schedule, do some fittings, for kind of like our standard use fittings, not necessarily in the tour van, but some use fittings. So you're working with golf, like real golfers in the store. And then there's, levels to pass on that, or a certain number of things to do for that, and then it can be the tour van fittings that we call them for new golf clubs in the building.
It's interesting that you say it, because now I realize why, you know, when you go to schedule a fitting, they ask if you're looking for new clubs or used clubs, and it's more about like the types of fitters, right? And there's different levels for that.
Yep, there is, and that's aside too from every the various certifications that are needed whenever there's new products out or new materials from any of the manufacturers to be certified for. So if this is just an example, but when Ping comes out with a new series of drivers and fairway woods, you know, that's a whole list of basically coursework that our fitters all go through to make sure we know that, like, the back of our hand.
Yeah.
And then also then completing fitting work with those products as well. So there's, you know, the second swing fitting stuff, and then there's also the product stuff, and that's all, it's basically all year round for these fitters. Are going, they're completing the coursework in addition to all the fittings that they're doing. So
well, yeah, because the manufacturers definitely don't make it easy. We just played Winsong the North Course today before recording this, which was super fun. And we were talking about, like, you mentioned that Titus is coming out with a new mini driver. I'm like, what the hell, man? Like, they just came out with the actual drivers. Like, why wouldn't they release it at the same time? Yeah. And then, like, the Titleist drivers are coming out in June, mm-hmm. when most of the manufacturers came out, like, early in the season before the season started. And they definitely don't make it easy with their release schedules and when things come out. And, like, I haven't figured out if there's a science behind it. I'm starting to either realize or, like, my opinion is there's not. Because if there was, it would be, like, pretty consistent. It doesn't seem like it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's... the only thing we know is every December and January for us is just going to be crazy busy, because every, you know, January first couple weeks is when all the manufacturers are releasing something. That's the only thing we know. And over the years, it's been Callaway, TaylorMade, and Cobra are basically every year they've got a whole new lineup of stuff in January. And then depending on the year, you're paying your Strixon, your Mizunos, they might have... maybe not a full lineup, but maybe it's a couple iron sets or some wedges. And this has just been historically over the last 6 to 8 years that, you know, I've been kind of doing this type of thing. I've noticed those trends. But I don't know what the best science is. I know it seems like Titleist is maybe changing some things, because in the past their summer release was maybe closer to August when it was their full launch was completed. Now it's back into June with GTS here. So, maybe they're going to start moving earlier into January. I don't know. It's all kind of a, we just have to take it as it goes a little bit. All we know is every January is going to be busy for us.
Yeah. And it just stays busy because people trade stuff in and they get new stuff.
Yeah.
So for you, you're knock on wood, going to be a fitter here. I assume you'll pass. You seem like you know what you're doing.
I would like to think my chances are good.
Yeah. But the rest of the gig. So, You're the brains behind, like, this partnership, and you do a ton of, like, you do the podcast. You're usually, like, if anybody watches the Second Swing YouTube channel, you're all over there. I've seen you in and out of the store sometimes, like, messing with different equipment. Like, what is the day-to-day like for you? Because it seems like a pretty sweet gig when you get to just, like, test everything all day, every day, manage a lot of partnership stuff. You guys have a lot of great partnerships, too. So, like, talk to me about it.
Yeah,
it's a unique deal.
Yeah, it's I'm very lucky to be at Second Swing doing what I'm doing. And I kind of go back to pre-COVID. I was hired to be a writer, actually, for Second Swing.
Oh, really?
So, interesting. At the time, it was kind of website copywriting, product-based, you know, written content on the website. You know, you go to the ping, I guess, at that time, G410 driver page, and you'd see, like, a written description of the product. You know, that would be something I would do.
Yeah.
But... we quickly realized, I think, as a company, like, people are interested in video. And that's how people consume content now. They don't want to read for 3 minutes about what a product is. They'd rather just see it in action in video. And so we've, you know, as a company, put a lot of time, resources into that. And that sort of is how my role just changed. And over time, we've seen success. The team's grown. We've added editors. We've added producers. We've added more people onto the social media side of things as well. And it's been really fun now to see all the different initiatives that we can pull off on YouTube, on social media, and through, you know, all our, like, paid advertisements now too. We're all doing almost all video for that now too. So it's really cool to see. The day-to-day it's kind of coordinating all these video shoots that we're doing. And then the timeline in terms of when things are going to be scheduled, prioritizing the edits for our editing team. It's a lot of that stuff. And then managing the different partnerships we have, with some ambassadors, influencers, things like that.
Yeah. Because the, quote unquote, YouTube golf has taken off over the last, call it 5 years. Yeah. And so, like, you guys are continuing to just keep up with the trends of just, like, golf in general, right? Like, you guys are almost your own, I don't want to say manufacturer, cause you're not a manufacturer, but kind of like your own golf brand in some way, shape or form. And it's kind of, like, cool to be on the sidelines and watch this, all the different, like, trends and where golf has gone these past, you know, basically since COVID, like you mentioned, it's just completely changed. Do you have a take on where like the next 5 years is going to be? Like, how much more are we going to see just online with all these big, you know, YouTube golf channels? And like, you know, obviously Bryson's probably a little bit crazier on the end of the spectrum of like going full-time YouTube, but you're seeing a lot of pros like document their journeys and doing these things. James Nicklaus, if you know who that is, like he just qualified for the US Open. Like that dude can play. Mm-hmm. Like he does a lot of like full-time YouTube golf stuff. Like, where do you think this is all going 5 years from now? Are we just going to consume, do everything like virtually, and everything's going to be video, and like the store stuff is just there, it's always going to be there, but everything is just moving to this online virtual deal?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's, you know, to some end, I don't think there's any possible way to know what that answer is. Like the trends and how people consume content seems to change every few months of what the quote unquote best practice is. But I think there's a few key rules that I've realized is just people want to be entertained and you have to grab their attention immediately. And so that's something that we try to do with any type of video that we produce. And I also think people hook themselves onto personalities. And so that's where you've seen, if you, you know, any YouTube channel that you might follow, you're probably, if you follow it continuously or you go back to this channel over and over, it's probably because there's a personality that you are attached to or that you've grown to like quite a bit, or maybe multiple there. And so I think we've realized that, you know, as a brand, we want to have that viewer, you know, attach themselves to the Second Swing brand, where they want to know, you know, what our perspective is next on the new equipment, or what's the next thing Second Swing has to say about golf equipment that could help your game. And yeah, so that's kind of what we're trying to, I guess, add into everything video wise that we're doing, whether it's a specific product review we're doing, or it's, you know, here's why you should be playing a 9-wood now versus your 5-iron or something like that.
Yeah. I love the like Master Fitter series stuff you guys do, where it's like their favorite clubs of the year, because, you know, your guys and gals that are doing fittings literally fit hundreds, if not thousands of golfers in a year. And they see a ton of trends, right, in terms of, you know, like you said, 9-woods and 7-woods, or like different types of drivers or whatever it may be. For this year specifically, we're definitely far enough along now. You know, I'll 1000% clip this because the driver talk always gets going. But yeah, I want to get your perspective on the drivers for this year, and transparently, like from your lens, how much has actually changed technology wise versus look and feel, right? Because you know, you do hear a lot of people online talk about how, you know, if you have a modern driver, call it within the last 5, probably even 10 years, it's not that things have changed drastically, but they've changed enough. And I feel like what I've seen over the years is a lot of look, feel, and then sometimes you just find a driver that really fits, you know, for your miss, or maybe the center of gravity changed a little bit and that's good for like what you play. This year specifically, how much has actually changed technology-wise versus just look, feel, and, you know, maybe like a matchup thing?
Yeah, that's you're 100% right in terms of drivers are incrementally getting better. Now, if you have a driver that you got in 2013, 2014, you probably should upgrade that if you're an avid player, because you will see the differences. But if your driver is from 3 or 4 years ago, you probably won't see a massive change. But what they've... what every manufacturer seemingly is doing is adding adjustability options. And it's obviously, it makes things a lot more fun for our fitters, but I'm just thinking the TaylorMade QI4D series, you kind of took what they did with the R7 quad mini driver. And now there's the 4 weight ports. You can move, you know, 2 heavyweights into the heel, 2 in the toe. You can move both the heavyweights back for more stability, right? So you can play with that a lot. Thinking about the G440K series, or 440K driver, the one I'm playing now, it was the 10K driver they had from G430, which was their kind of high MOI max for
game. My like favorite driver I've ever played.
Yeah, but now it's more or less the same club, but they've got an adjustable weight in the back now. So trying to, you know, if you want to dial in a little bit of a draw bias or a fade bias, you can do that. The new GTS drivers, there's front and back adjustable weighting with every one of them. So, you know, the way that they're calling it is like, this is basically 6 drivers in this driver series.
Yeah.
You know? And so... say what you will about the technology, and again, it's incrementally getting better. And for probably most players, year over year, you won't see a noticeable difference on the golf course, but what the differences are through the fitting and making sure that, you know, the weight is where it should be in the club head for your swing, where your miss is. If, for example, if you make contact in the heel a lot for your miss, you should probably move a little bit more weight to the heel side because you're going to get a little
bit more. That's what I did with the GTS3.
Yeah, you're going to get a little bit more pop, a little bit on those misses that you do have, and they'll perform better for you, and that will be the difference that you notice out there.
Yeah, which is what I've noticed with my drive. So I literally came on this podcast probably a month ago and talked about how I thought the GTS2 was going to be like driver of the year because of everything you just talked about. Now it has front and back weight, and it's a super forgiving head. And then I went in and I saw Luke at Wintong, and we were just going through all, we basically did all the weight and hosel adjustments we could on the GTS 2 and 3, because I threw the 4 away right away. Like, it wasn't for me. Mm-hmm. And being able to move the weight, the front weight on the 3 to the H1, so the heel, the first heel one, that's like where my, like, if you look at my driver face, like, that's where I hit it. Like, I hit the ball just slightly towards the heel.
Yep.
And that gave me a little bit better performance than the two. And all of a sudden, like, I hit that thing phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a great driver for me.
I watched it today. I mean, it was just, it was, every tee shot was a carbon copy kind of bullet down the middle.
Yeah, it's really good.
And again, and that's, and it can, and even if you slightly miss the center of the face and you do hit that, maybe it's a half inch to the heel or something, that ball is going to fly similar with that weight more in the heel. And, you know, again, the drivers are getting slightly more forgiving. So, if you've done any type of research on drivers, you've probably seen it out there, people saying this, but it is true. Like, the difference you're going to see is not when you hit it dead center of the club face. Your ball is probably going to fly similar. It's going to go the same distance for the most part. The difference is going to be when you miss the center of the face, hit it towards the toe or towards the heel, the ball is going to fly pretty close to the same nowadays with a brand new driver that's fit for you.
I want to talk mini drivers with you because you love your Cobra mini driver. I saw that thing today too. That was a great club for you just all day out there. They're starting to, like, more manufacturers are making them. I feel like actually, Ping, does Ping have a mini driver yet? They're coming out with one, right? So I think I saw it on the conforming list.
They launched last year that they called a Thriver, which is essentially they just built their driver with a fairway shaft.
But aren't they actually building a mini driver now?
There's been one on the conforming list, but I have no idea if they're actually going to launch one or not. Because we actually, this is kind of some, you know, we filmed some content down in Dallas with Christo Lamprecht, if you're familiar.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like the 6 foot nine golfer.
Oh, yeah.
He's playing a Thriver too. And he said he's tried one of their mini drivers they built in, but for him, he likes the Thriver better, which is basically a G440 Max 12 degree driver with one of their fairway shafts. So I don't know if they're going to release it or not. I have not seen or heard anything, but I know that they've built something for their pros.
I was going to say, because you've got now Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway, Cobra, potentially Ping coming out. So pretty much all the major manufacturers have one. My biggest question has always been, like, they're all so different. Like, a lot of the, you know, normal drivers are, like, you know, a little bit similar. I think, like, if you took the branding and stuff off them, like, yeah, you could tell which one's which, but they're very similar. Like, I look at the mini drivers and they all have these very different profiles, head shapes, head sizes. What is the reason for that? Like, are manufacturers trying to, like, figure the mini driver out a little bit? Like, it doesn't seem like anybody's, like, cracked the code on it, and all of a sudden, like, now they all kind of look and feel similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's been one magic formula that every manufacturer's sort of...
Yeah, we're like, drivers kind of look, you know, relatively similar. Yeah, a lot of same shapes and sizes.
Yeah, I think this is the early stages of, you know, everybody having a mini driver. Like, I would say the Titleist GT280, more or less, they took the shape of that 975 from early 2000s, and they just kind of made that their mini driver shape. And for me, that's a little too deep of a face, and I was struggling hitting it off the deck. And so then, so for me, that eliminated that. The Callaway mini drivers, going back, actually Elite and the Quantum, are little too big.
Yeah, they're too big for me too.
340 cc, I believe.
Sick off the tee.
Yeah, they're great. But again, not quite off the deck. And then, so for me, it came down to R7 Quad from TaylorMade, Cobra King Mini, and I just like the look a little bit better of the Cobra King Mini, but they're very close in size and shape. They're very similar. If you are the player that you're tinkering a lot with adjustable weights, our 7 Quad, again, has those four weight ports, and you can really mess around with where the center of gravity is there. But I've just got mine with the heavier, I think, 12-gram weight on the Cobra forward for me, and it's been great. I can hit whatever shot I want to.
Do you know, you probably know this, will the new Titleist Mini Driver just have the front and back weight, or will they actually be adjustable?
That I don't know. I mean, there's been some photos leaked, and you can kind of make some, if you, I think like Golf DebrX probably has a photo out there somewhere. You can maybe make some assumptions, but I haven't seen anything further on that.
I'm just kind of curious because I'm probably going to switch out of the current one. I need to figure out a way to hit it off the deck a little bit better.
I'm not sure. I don't have any further details on it. But, you know, I think you've seen there's been some reports of some players putting it in play right away, or at least trying it. So
yeah, I mean, they definitely have with the GTS drivers. I mean, dude, those things came out. Well, that's, and people put them immediately in the bag.
That's one thing Titleist, it seems like, has a, I don't know if it's a leg up, but it seems like their tour staffers put stuff in the bag immediately.
Yeah.
You know, way quicker than other OEMs. Like the new stuff, it just seems to click better. I don't know if there's a process they got going there
that,
with their tour staff, that's a little bit different, but it seems like right away they get all this adoption immediately.
That is interesting because, I mean, I've heard, you know, like Scotty, for example, I can't remember what they were talking about, but it was a club that had just come out, and he's like, yeah, you've been trying it on and off for like a year. Like, he literally been trying it for a year in advance. So I imagine all the other, you know, staffer, like, they're doing similar things. But you're right. I mean, I think Cam Young right away, like, came out and was playing all the GTS stuff and then went and won with it in the bag.
And he's had that. He had the big ball change last year, which really changed for him.
He went to the left dash.
It was a
double
Cam
dot.
Cam Young only, like a double left dot or something that is only for him, really. They did a bunch of ball testing up at their plant in Massachusetts, and they realized he needed a certain, I think it was a lower spin but higher ball flight sort of thing. And he won, that was at the Wyndham last year, like immediately. Mm-hmm. And then he had that really great run at the Ryder Cup. And then obviously this year he's had
A career season. Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually switched to the left dot, which is in between the left dash and the one.
Yeah.
So it's like lower spin off the tee, but you still get some more spin around the green. Because I don't like how the left dash sounds and feels. It's very firm for me.
I think that's kind of similar to
and
the
I
he
think,
has. I think he
like
has a
if you,
more extreme version of
it. If you dial it in, I would assume the double dot is between the dot and the dash, which like just to me sounds crazy, but for those guys, I mean, it makes a difference, obviously. I mean, he's playing really well with it. So
Something clicked. Like you can kind of see if you go back through his finishes and like his world ranking and, you know, where his numbers were, like you could see kind of where that switch happened.
Yeah.
It's like, that's when he's
crazy how much it matters. And I remember I was playing with John Ellis, is a member of Windsong. He's been on the pod, was caddying for Wyndham. I believe now he's caddying for, or he was with Finau, and I think he's going to be with Homa now. And I remember I asked, I was like, what ball does Wyndham play? He's like, 2019 Pro V1. It was a specific year and model, and like they still have a bunch of those balls that, you know, they give Wyndham to be able to play. I'm like, how long till that runs out?
That's a great question.
Do they have like 10 years worth of 2019 Pro V1 models?
I'm sure depending on the player,
they're able to go replicate it, right?
They'll replicate it for somebody, right? But that's a great,
especially for a guy like that.
Good little nugget there.
Yeah. It was just funny. Like it was a specific year and model from the year, which I go, dude, it's just crazy. Like everything matters for those dudes.
Yeah, and even I'm the player. I'm like, I'm not going to notice a difference between 2019 and Pro V1 and 2025 Pro
V1. But it is funny, like when you put it on the TrackMan. I mean, TrackMan has changed so much, and obviously you guys see this in fittings now that you're going to be a fitter.
Yeah.
You got to know all the numbers for TrackMan. Right. Like, you're able to see all that stuff. Like, I'm fascinated listening to Rory and Scotty talk about, like, numbers that they look for on TrackMans and quads and all the data, and I feel like, you know, obviously some of it could potentially be to a detriment because you can just be chasing, you know, like the 0-0 path or whatever, but it is just amazing. You know, I'll throw down a Pro V1X at second swing, hit a ball, I'll throw down a Pro V1, and like just looking at the spin difference with a 7 iron, it's like 300 RPMs of spin. You're like, there you go. That's it's the ball. Like, it actually does make a difference for you.
Which is, it is important that we, every one of our fittings, the fitters do bring up golf ball. It might not be the same spot in every fitting, depending on how it's going. If if the player just really can't find a way to get the ball flight down, say, it's like, well, all right, what ball are you playing? I'm playing the Pro V1X. Well, okay, let's try the Pro V1. That will lower the ball flight. And
yeah,
sometimes that's all the change needed, and that can really accelerate things. So, the launch monitor tech is crazy, and I'm with you on, I'm a player, as a golfer, I want to think as little as I can. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm not hitting a bunch of balls into numbers into TrackMan and seeing numbers, because I just know I'll, the next day on the course, crazy. I'll be like, yeah, was my path like -5 on that swing?
Oh, man, that came out 300 more RPMs.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like, you never know. You just maybe did something a little bit in your swing, or like held onto it a little longer. Right. The face was a little bit closer.
You know, you could have been just lined up 15 yards right over where you wanted to, and that's why you missed.
Yeah.
To me, I'm all about simplifying it. And that's what's nice about the fit. Like, the fitters can do all of the numbers, you know, analysis and optimize all that. And ideally the players are sitting there hitting golf shots, and then it's like, okay, this is what works for you.
Of all the stuff you guys have seen, I always like to talk about clubs that, you know, for general population column, like, you know, everyday player, mid handicap, you know, what's like the club that a lot of people have gotten that's kind of changed in their bag? And I'll give you an example. Like, for me, it's always been the 7-wood. Mm-hmm. I remember when I got rid of the 4-iron and went to a 7-wood, it was like life-changing.
Yeah.
And I've got the 7-wood back in the bag this year instead of a 4-iron, unless it's a super windy day, and I forget how much I love it, because I can do so much with it. What this year, or even the last like 2 years, what's the club that you've seen replace a lot of clubs in people's bags and has just been like something that just clicks and does well?
Well, you said, you know, high-lofted fairway wood. You said the 7-wood and the 9-wood, and so I'll give you that one, and I won't steal that one. So what I'll do is go to kind of a category of wedges, the cavity back wedges. The Cleveland CBZ, that's a wedge that's been really, really good. And it's essentially, it looks like a traditional wedge, feels like a traditional wedge, but it has a more forgiving sole and a little bit of a cavity there. So for the golfers that struggle around the greens with their chipping, maybe they're skinny dipping some shots, they're getting them fat on those chip shots, and, you know, they dunk those chips a couple feet in front of them. Like, those cavity back or a Cleveland CBZ is one that has been a game changer for those folks. So I would still say number one at this point is like the high-lofted fairway woods for that player, but a kind of a 1B, if you will, is like a cavity back wedge that flows more seamlessly with a player's distance or game improvement iron set down the bag, versus going from a large chunky iron set and then right away into like a Vokey SM11, which is just like a straight up blade. That's not a smooth transition. And so I think some forgiveness, at least blended down, maybe your gap wedge and your sand wedge are a cavity back, and then you have kind of your traditional blade lab wedge. But it's just, I think a lot of golfers could benefit from a little bit of forgiveness and perimeter weighting with their wedges.
Man, maybe I need to look at that. I like my wedges on my full swing, but around the green, I'm getting better on the greens. I'm not going to look at anything, actually.
Yeah.
I'm going to remove that thought about going to try to tweak something right now, because I've been hitting it all right. What about the putters? I've asked everybody about like zero torque and lab, because, like, my God, you know, the past couple of years, it's been just crazy. I mean, what's your take on
all of this? It's wild. And lab is clearly at like the forefront of this whole zero torque movement. It seems like, you know, without calling it exactly that, but like, it seems like a lot of these OEMs are kind of seeing that and they're saying, hey, we should try to find our own version of that. Yeah. Right. But it clearly works. Yeah. There's more and more adoption on tour. And that's kind of the first place I look to this stuff, is if the best players in the world think it can help them, can probably help a lot of other players. And so there's something to, you know, there's a magic to it there. You know, the idea that, you know, the way lab explains it, it's kind of like, I've used this analogy in videos before too, but it's like, if you're driving a vehicle down the road and you take your hands off the steering wheel, it's like almost lane assist for putters, like the zero torque. It's going to keep the face square through your putting stroke. You know, it's going to keep the car in the lane, so to speak. So that's kind of what Lab is calling it, and now these other OEMs are going after it. But I think if you are a player that has a lot of arc in your putting stroke, it will be a little more difficult for you to adapt that style to your bag. There are some that have that are kind of built. Ping's got one. Their catch onset, they call it onset. It's a little bit built a little bit more for some arc, but for the most part, if you are heavily arcing your putting stroke, it'll be a little tougher to adapt to something like that.
Hmm. Is that that's not the new what's it called, like the Scottsdale? That's not the one that Wyndham's playing, is it?
No, so he's playing the Alley Blue, which okay. is a that one's a little bit more of that straight back, straight through type build. But there's another one in that series, the Scottsdale Tech series, that is a little bit has like a, not as onset, I guess, or a little bit built different. And so that it's kind of designed for a slight arc in the putting stroke.
Yeah. Well, I always love talking about, like, these are some of my favorite combos because I'm such a gearhead, and, like, I just love the gearhead clips because people enjoy it. You get to test and literally do everything. I saw your bag today, but I want you to walk through high level, like,
yeah,
walk through your bag and why you decided on certain stuff. Yeah, you have a very mixed bag, like a very interesting bag as well. And as somebody that's seen everything, like, talk about it because it's definitely unique.
Yeah. So last year I went with something a little different than the driver with the Shrix on. I didn't dislike it, but the last year I felt like that was my driver to play a cut, but this year I was like, I just want to swing hard with my driver. And so G440K lets me do that. And I would also add to that for me, this is my first year really playing like premium shafts in my woods.
You always just went with stock.
I went with stock, you know, swung it, felt good, done. But this year I really got dialed in for my driver shaft, my mini driver shaft. And I have a 7-wood in the bag or in my, I guess, trunk that I could plug in for my driving iron if I want to. But those are all, I got Fujikura Ventus, the Velocor Plus Black in my driver, and then I'm in the red for my mini driver. But there's just a certain extra level of kind of confidence I have. I can just swing my swing, and I know that my misses are going to be just a little bit tighter. Mm-hmm. It seems like the shaft has made the difference there too. So anyway, G440K with that Ventus Velocor Plus Black. I've got that Cobra King mini driver with the red Ventus Velocor Plus. And I've got a Ping IDI 3-iron or G440 Max 7-wood, depending on the day, the conditions. Most of the time I lean towards the 3-iron, but...
do you hit that mostly off the tee?
Mostly, yeah. It's
240 yards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 240, and actually where I play most of my golf, I hit that very often.
Yeah.
Irons, this year I went back to Mizuno. I played Mizuno for a long time. I went back, I wore a Strixon for a little bit. Now back to Mizuno. The Mizuno Pro... M13 and then into the Pro S3.
Are those these year or did those come out last year?
Pro S3 was launched last year. The M13s were this year. Yeah. So kind of like what was the 243?
Sure.
The replacement there. Yep. But Mizuno's, they just look great.
And they do.
They look fantastic.
And they feel good. They feel buttery.
Yeah. They're awesome. So, and then down in the wedges, Vokey SM11. And I have actually the RTZ Cleveland 60. And then a Mizuno M-Craft Tokyo putter.
Yeah, and you don't see a lot of Mizuno putters.
No. I just love, their putters are forged, so I just loved how that thing felt. And it's kind of got like the wing back, call it like the number 7 shape a little bit to that putter. And it just fit my eye. And
so you got Mizuno putter,
yep.
A Cleveland wedge, Titleist wedge,
mm-hmm.
Mizuno irons. The 3-iron was a Sirxon?
Ping.
Oh,
Ping for the 3-iron.
Ping. Ping woods and then a ping driver.
Yeah, Cobra Mini.
Oh, and Cobra Mini.
Yeah,
so you got like 5 different manufacturers.
Yeah,
we're
checking the boxes, I guess.
Yeah, but, it's like true second swing form, man. Yeah. It's like that's it.
Yeah, I knew with the mini driver it was going to be tailor made a Cobra just because of the shape. Like I put those up, put those two down, and the Cobra ended up being just a little bit more friendly to me.
Yeah, that's the one that I never tried, and now you've got me like excited for the new Titleist Mini to come out. That's like the thing that I'm gonna have to go and and hit next. And I think the new GTS drivers come in store. This pod will come out this week. So I think tomorrow, right? Aren't the GTS drivers in store tomorrow?
Yeah, they're in store as of June 11.
Yeah, today's the 10th, isn't it?
So yeah.
Yeah, today's the 10th. So they come out tomorrow.
Yeah,
been waiting, man.
There we go.
Just been using the test one. That
oh, yeah?
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, yeah, I can't get my hands on one yet. I got one ordered, and I assume that it just shows up tomorrow, or knock on wood, I'm hoping it shows up tomorrow.
I know Titleist, they're pretty happy with GTS so far, in the sense of, like, people are liking it in the fittings, so.
Yeah, I mean, I really liked it.
Yeah, and second swing fitters love it too. So
yeah, you think that's going to be the one that comes up at the end of the year when you guys do all your fit? The K, right? Will. Everyone's been saying the Ping.
The Ping K has been great. GTS will be up there, and the Triple Diamond stuff from Callaway is always really good too.
Yeah.
Like in terms of pure ball speed, I feel like that's usually the leader. Is like the Callaway, I guess Quantum this year, Triple Diamond stuff. It seems like if you're purely looking for ball speed, that's like the first,
really
the first one that our fitters will go to. And then from there, if it's like, oh, I need a little more stability here, I need this here, a little spin control here,
maybe
something else. But
I talk about shaft a decent amount, but I was playing with the guy, Nick Perbix, plays for the Predators and can absolutely move it. Like, dude can move it. You know, he's a professional athlete.
Yeah,
he's, he's young. Like, he's strong, dude. And he was playing a Ventus Black 7X, I think, like, super stiff in his driver and, like, was just blocking it right. And then he would, like, pull out his 3-wood, and it was just high draw all day. I can't remember what shaft he had in there. But I ended up, long story short, told him to go, like, just try and match up your driver to whatever the hell you've got in the woods because you're crushing those. He went, and I think he ended up going back to, like, a just stock shaft, and all of a sudden it's like making all the difference in the world. I know you went from like stock to premium, but I would like to hear your take on, obviously shaft matters a lot for people, and I actually think it's one of the bigger pieces of the equation more than just the, you know, heads of stuff. Like, it actually has a lot to do with feel and speed and tempo, and like can make a big difference. What for you, when you went to premium, did you see, like, because I've just always played a premium shaft. I've never even thought to like pull off the rack. I've just always played Blue Board or Ventus, and I just, those are the two I go between, generally speaking. So I've never really known, like, dialed in, like, what is the difference? Because, like, people see a, you know, $300 shaft and go, screw it, that, man. Like, it's super expensive. And it is. Like, it is actually kind of crazy. You're paying $300 for a thing that's like 40 inches long. And
I mean, today, to get a brand new driver with, you know, a premium or upgraded, or call it aftermarket shaft, you're paying $1,000.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or more than that.
Yeah.
But it's, to me, it's the, well, the kind of the gist of it is that there's these unique materials that cost the manufacturers more money, that cost Fujikura, that cost Mitsubishi more money, that they can put in these products, and then they have to charge them or upcharge them to, you know, make it work for them as a business. It's the reality of it. And, but to me, what I've noticed is, again, and I said it before, but it's like, it resists the twisting essentially a little bit more on these. So to me, I can lash at it like I want to, and I know I'm not going to miss crazy. Like, my block way right is not going to happen like I used to have, or this big duck hook left is not going to happen. Now I'm going to miss left and right, but it's the dispersion, so to speak, is going to be
50 yards instead of 80 yards.
Yeah. It's going to be much tighter. And I could absolutely say that with 100% confidence that that's been a huge change for me. I can step up to a tee box with my driver, mini driver, and I can commit to a swing way better now, just knowing that I have that and those two shafts in my bag.
Yeah. Well, to, you know, wrap up and plug second swing, like, to your point, brand new, I mean, $800,000, like, I am definitely the guy that will go in and try new stuff, and I'm able to get premium shaft, maybe a used head, and like cut that price in half, and like, you're just not able to do that in most places. So
yeah,
well, I shout think out second swing.
What's also cool too, and we've kind of just started really doing this, is you can trade in, like, bring in your driver if it's a 20. I don't know, I'm thinking Callaway Maverick, you got it stock or something from 6 years ago, and you're like, I want something new now. You can come in, trade in that stock shaft, and we have shafts both, whether it's a stock or we've got the aftermarket stuff, we have a bunch of those at every one of our stores that you can try out and just plug that into your driver. And maybe that works a lot better for you instead of, again, buying the new thing for $1,000.
Yeah.
So we've got, you can trade in your shafts just like you can golf clubs.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
It's been like, I mean, I get it from any just business standpoint, like what has happened since COVID and golf, it like, it's become super, super expensive, right? Like it just has, like, and obviously it's, you know, probably great for you guys as well, just to be able to, you know, sell and trade in all these clubs. Like that's obviously the business model, but holy cow, like going into a store and just buying a new club nowadays, it's really expensive. And I will literally tell everybody till my grave, dude, just go buy last year's model of a used one and you're going to get pretty darn close. And just like go to Second Swing or somewhere and like just do that.
Yeah. It's close to the same thing. There's a lot of value to be had in the 2026. So the 2025, 2024 or 2023 stuff. And we have a ton of it at Second Swing.
I was going to say, so I've never asked this question and I have to as my last question. Like what happens with all the, like you guys are going to have a crazy amount of inventory of stuff going back like decades too, right? Like, is it always going to be there or do you guys eventually like, you know, I know you've got to deal with PGA as well. Does some of it get like donated? I mean, like how,
I mean,
where does it go?
Well, like there's, we never run out of stuff. And that's because to your point, we have these partnerships in place to like, we're the official, you know, used club marketplace of the PGA of America. We've got, these partnerships with country clubs as well around the country where kind of a trade-in program there. And so there's always going to be places that we get our inventory. But it's one of the, it's really the calling card of the business. Like, and it's, we now we're running out of space in our current, you know,
I can imagine.
And so now we're looking for new space there. We got a new store opening this fall in West Palm Beach, Florida, which will be another place to throw a bunch of, you know, probably 30 plus thousand golf clubs in that store. So there's, and you're exactly right. Like the boom in golf, there's a whole ripple effect there, but another one of those ripple effects is that there's going to be inventory of golf clubs because people are playing golf at record levels and they need new stuff. They need to be, they're dialing in their equipment now. They're playing more golf so that they want to get better. And to get better, you got to dial in your equipment, which means getting rid of your old stuff. And it's just this kind of ongoing cycle that we're seeing. And it's really good to see the game grow. It's good for Second Swing too. And we're really excited about what, you know, the future holds too, because there's new stores opening. And, you know, I know you've had Brady on to talk about like the virtual fittings that we can do now, which is really cool stuff. So whether you're at a store location or you're not, you can experience the Second Swing fitting process.
Yeah, man, you guys are awesome. Love having you guys on the pod and love the partnership. And, you know, all the stuff works for me. I'm able to play a sick mixed bag thanks to you guys. And I go on there all the time and people are great. And I send everybody I can you guys' way. It's awesome.
Yeah, well, we appreciate everything you're doing too. And it's, it's great. You're obviously a great ambassador for the game of golf, but of course with Second Swing too. And it's, we'd love to have anybody in the store, or, you know, through talk to Brady as well. If you're listening, not near the store, we can get you dialed in.
He said he's had some crazy virtual fittings.
Oh, I'm sure he has. Yeah. That's the best part is people hear about us and they could be in Alaska or something. I don't know. I'm just making that up, but you can go get fit for clubs and get, a truly like one of a kind tour level experience that, you know, you can't really do.
Did you see his case, his virtual case? Have you seen those?
I have. Yeah.
Dude, they're sweet.
It's a pretty cool pack.
And like, it's got a launch monitor inside of it. And then like all the different, I mean, dude, you can fit a lot in there. I was like, dude, it looks like you have a massive gun case in your trunk. Like it was cool.
Yeah. That's the thing is like when we are rolling out something new like this, we want to do it right. And by sending somebody really, really good launch monitor and, you know, depending on the fit, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 different shafts, X number of club heads, and then, you know, the tools needed to test them all out. And then, I mean, that's the right way to do it.
Yeah.
And so they can experience all the same numbers, data, you know, the fitting analysis, all of that on their driving range or in their garage or at their, you know, if they have a home set up somehow to hit golf balls, you can do that in your backyard. Like,
yeah.
It's great.
Come here, pounding the screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, man. Well, you guys are doing a lot of great stuff. Honestly, you know, keep it up, and then we'll do something again in September. We got to have you come play the South Course now, so you can, you know, see the other side of Winsong.
The North Course is great. It's a really, as I think Brady called it, a nice teaser to the South Course, and I'd say it's a fair assessment. And today with the wind, there were some true.
It picked
really
up on the back.
Holes. Yeah,
yeah. Like you said, it's you know. people always think they see the scorecard like, oh, it's like a short course, like that's cool. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, go play the blacks and then go play hole 18 and then tell me if you think it's a short course.
I mean, yeah. Like today I hit a really, really good low draw tee shot into the wind, and I had a full 5-iron into the green on a par 4.
On a front right pin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Back pin, you're probably hitting, you're hitting that 3-iron for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right, Drew. I appreciate it, man. Thank you for finally coming on.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.